and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast,
episode 662.
That's right. We really only have one topic tonight, right? We don't have sales to get into.
No, I checked, actually. I did check. We might have a problem. Depending, it might be like a week away. ICV2 is pretty good. I still find it fascinating, by the way, the comic book revolution is still like a month behind. That when it took them forever to upload the June sales, and they still only have the June sales, even though the July sales have been out for almost a month. Since August 10th.
Someone on their team must have the same subscription you do, right?
I would like to think somebody's got to have a subscription to it. But the fact is, I don't understand why they were so late to get their article up to begin with, and why they haven't done these haven't caught up to speed, because they're a month behind. It doesn't matter. It's just a point of conversation. It doesn't affect us anymore, because yes, I get them directly from ICB2. So whenever they get them, we have them and we can talk about them. But yeah.
But tonight, our focus is episode 3 of Lanterns. As we record this, it came out last night. So I know some of you listening to the show, you probably prefer to hear this stuff sooner rather than later. But we have our own timeline that we work in. It just has so happened to work out there's not a Green Lantern issue to talk about this week, because there's a lot to talk about with episode 3 of Lanterns. So hey, we get a dedicated episode to do it.
Yeah, timing would have been nice if we would. I mean, if things had gone a little differently. I mean, unless we want a double release, which I don't think we do. That the reality is, we could have had this episode out the same week that 3 dropped. But on the bright side, one of the few bright sides you could say about episode 3 is people will probably be talking about episode 3 longer than they will for most episodes of the series, because it's going to be hard. I'm not saying this. You never say never, because who the hell knows what we're going to get in the show. And talking about the hot button race politics crap. I would find it difficult to believe you're going to have a more controversial or hot potato episode than this one. But we don't know plot wise other things that might come down the road in the next 5 episodes that could be just as controversial, but in a different way. But it's probably safe to say, no matter what, that barring some dramatic plot twist or something that people are just going to crap their pants over, that this is certainly the most controversial episode as of now, and it probably will be, at least be conservative, it'll be in the top 2 when the series ends, at the very least, because this one's pretty powerful.
Agreed. So where did you want to start?
I kind of half jokingly said we probably should talk about some of the good things, I guess, because we're probably not going to be spending as much time on good in this episode. About this episode, I enjoyed the fact that even though John is clearly screwed up, John's aware that he's screwed up to a large extent, in the sense that when the Guardian is giving
him, is he
aware? He's aware somewhat. Okay. I think we'd like to believe that part of his journey, because if not, then he's going to be like Captain Marvel and no one's going to give a crap about him. Because Captain Marvel had a reason why she had the emotional range of a potato too, but once they did away with it, it didn't change people's affection towards her or openness to her. That I think he knows he's screwed up. He just doesn't know that his being a slave to order and just following orders, never questioning orders, just I don't need to know. But some of the stuff we're going to delve into deep in specific areas related to this episode, that's ultimately something he's going to have to move away from to find who he really is, that he's going to have to believe in himself and not just say, these are your orders, soldier. Of course, he's a Marine, but you get the point. and just do it, which is the way John Stewart currently is in 2016, that you just, he doesn't care, just give him an order, he's going to follow it. That
yeah, you actually, you bring it up, you mentioned two of the points I have on my list, because I actually went through, I found the scripts for this episode, and just like to back up my points, I copied and pasted certain quotes from certain characters to go along with the points. And one of those is, the Guardian literally says, your training must have resulted in great loneliness. As humans require high levels of social connection, that isolation appears to be in direct opposition to your programming. John says, humans aren't programmed, we're raised. The Guardian says, I do not understand the distinction. And John says, well, there is one. To which I messaged you something akin to, John has the thickest blinders on of anybody in the world about his parents and how they raised him.
except, and this is where I was going with this. And we can immediately circle back to what you're saying, because that's something, because there's so many different ways to talk about this. That when Laura Linney, Liana, they actually named her Liana. She's that Guardian. Was that the one in the series that was that muscle bound one?
I don't remember. I didn't actually look it up.
Kyle, but yeah. Either way, I guess technically they're calling her Liana based on the closed captioning. That when she's talking to John Stewart, which is interesting again, that she asked him what he knows about Sinestro, which is such an odd question to ask somebody who knows literally nothing about space and anything else, because obviously on Earth the only people who are going to know anything, what people are going to know about Sinestro on Earth, you assume it all comes from Hal Jordan talking about Sinestro, and nothing more than that. So her asking John Stewart, what do you know about Sinestro, is really interesting just by itself, because it's like you would think they would be able to find that out just by Googling it, being able to figure out because that's what the sheriff was able to do, because John Stewart pretty much repeats verbatim the entire thing that the sheriff said. But during that conversation, Liana makes it clear that one of their concerns about Hal Jordan is the fact that he still seems to have some affection and closeness to his former mentor, Sinestro, despite the fact that Sinestro, you know, went to the dark side. And John pointed out that that's human, even though I would argue it's more of a natural sentient being reaction. But John can only relate to being human, so that's a fine term to use, because he made the point of, even I think I'm paraphrasing maybe slightly, that about having that still having that affection towards people who raised you, like even if they're like insane or something like that. So whatever he said semantically, literally the words that he used, he clearly was talking about his parents. Mm-hmm. So he is self-aware enough. I know what you mean. He may not realize how effed up that he is. But he obviously knows some of what, because she's asking him questions about, you'd be closer with your brothers if you weren't raised the way you were. And he said yes. So he clearly understands. He just, again, the problem is he's got the emotional range of a piece of cardboard because of how stunted he is, that it makes it difficult to get much of a reaction out of him. But you know what's in there bubbling up. You've seen it almost bubble up. So he's just really emotionally repressed. But
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I just for those of you playing along at home, Mark said we start with the positives. This is a positive.
That is, yeah.
Because we're talking about deep characterization, and like he's very clearly struggling with this, and you hope that later on in the season that he starts to break free of his, you know, his own programming essentially, and realizes what he had been trained to do, and so on and so forth, and just becomes his own man. Because the other side of it, the second thing you kind of alluded to. Guardian says, would you be comfortable replacing Hal Jordan, understanding that he would be under the impression that you are simply his backup? John says, are those my orders? Which is a question he asks a lot in this episode, essentially. Are those my orders? Are you making this in order? It's almost like he's disagreeing with them, but his way of disagreeing is like, if I have to do that, then that's what I have to do. So are those my orders? I don't want to do this. But the Guardian says, if you get the job, yes, those would be your orders. Well, then it doesn't matter if I'm comfortable with it. This goes to my point that I've been saying. This is exactly why Hal has been trying to get such a rise out of John, is because as far as I see it now, the end of this episode gives me a little bit of a difference of opinion. Like it kind of challenges my view on this just a tad. But I feel like, you know, when he's like, hey, you don't want to say anything about me being late, I'd be pretty pissed off and all that stuff. And him saying like he's impressed with him that he slept with Zoe after 24 hours of being in this town and so on and so forth is Hal's been trying to get a rise out of John and just teach him to understand that the chain of command isn't end all be all. Like, he sees that John will do whatever he is told, even though he doesn't know what's going on with the Guardians. Well, one would assume he doesn't. It's possible he does. Anything's possible with storytelling. But assuming Hal doesn't know what's going on between John and the Guardian, he still sees, like, the Guardians are choosing him to replace me or take my ring or become a Green Lantern, whatever. But I firmly believe that Hal knows better than to allow that to happen with somebody like John, because I just wonder what he has learned in his 40 years of being a Green Lantern and everything that he has learned about how the Guardians operate, because we still don't know yet if the Guardians in this universe are the old school benevolent Guardians or if they're the conniving, shifty, always have secret Guardians that we're more used to in the modern age. Either could be true. But, like, either way, Hal has learned not to trust them for good reason. For different reasons, but, you know, old stoic, you know, set in their ways, people who have lost their grip on what it means to be alive and human, for lack of a better term, those types of people giving orders are a problem, just as, obviously, the, you know, conniving, shifty Guardians being in charge is also a problem. Both are a problem in their own right, and Hal is being able to see through that and wanting and knowing that somebody else needs to come into power of a Green Lantern and not just follow blindly what the Guardians have to say. So I just really feel like that they're really cementing that in place. Now, if Hal starts making it more personal, which we feel like, I guess he might, given how we assume maybe his conversation with Sinestro goes. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see. But, like, for now, I don't see any intentional harm to what Hal is trying to do in how he interacts with John. He's a bit of an ass, sure. He's a bit of, you know, stubborn or whatever. But, like, I don't get a negative read about him trying to trip him up. He's like, I feel like he's just being like, are you still human?
Yeah, like the unclench comment.
Yeah.
Which is, again, it's so much funny because we know in the comic books, historically, at least from Guy's perspective, Hal is the one who's ridiculously uptight and is inflexible. Mm-hmm. But we know, certainly, based on where they are in their relationship, Hal knows and Hal has learned to bend the rules and to view things differently, which of course is why one of the non-covert reasons why the Guardians want to get rid of him. They make it clear that, you know, the event that, you know, the unfortunate circumstance that caused John Stewart to get his whipping boy, for him to be the sacrificial lamb when Hal kind of intervened, not knowingly, of course, but capturing the guy John Stewart was about to kill, which people conveniently forget that, oh my God, Hal just screws things up. It's like, you know, John was going to kill that guy, and all Hal did was capture him, bring him to Guantanamo. John was a guy who really didn't care anything about who his target was. He was more than happy to kill him. I know it's his job, but when we're talking about moral ambiguity here, let's not pretend that, you know, like, make Hal out to be a horrible person because somebody who probably shouldn't have been shooting the shit and letting that information slide, and Hal said, oh, that sounds like a bad dude, I'll go get him for you. That the Guardians have made it clear that they don't want Hal Jordan interfering with quote-unquote terrestrial matters, which basically means unless the Guardians tell you to jump, they don't want you to jump. So, which is why, not surprisingly, John Stewart, being raised the way he is at the moment, makes him a perfect Green Lantern for them, because he'll do anything that they tell him to.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, without even questioning it, which is probably where the break is going to be, because I fully believe that what the Guardians really want, or at least what the Laura Linney character is going to ask at some point, she's going to literally ask John Stewart, when you have the opportunity, kill Hal Jordan.
Yeah,
and expecting him to do it, and the difference is that. This is why John, part of the reason why John does what he does, it's like being a bomber pilot. It's like, you know this, you know you're killing people, you know there's collateral damage, but you never stick around to see it, you never see any faces, you just move on, and it's easy to compartmentalize. This time that he's going to be asked to do something like that with somebody who he actually knows, And that will probably will be the breaking point when he realizes, okay, whether he's going to question why they want it or he's just not going to be able to do it. Who knows? Maybe that might be why he doesn't have a ring yet, Posley, in 2026, maybe. But either way. Okay, so go ahead.
No, yeah. So, I mean, the Guardian themselves, actually, Liana, confirms essentially what I'm saying is because John says, I was dishonorably discharged. She says, elaborate. He says, which part, the dishonorable or the discharge? Her response to that, I am more concerned with disobedience. And then she immediately asks what John knows about Sinestro. And yeah. Then she says of Hal, he still harbors deep affection for his mentor. It's quite, pause, troubling. So, like, and that's not new to us who have, like, heard all the leaks and stuff about the show before it came out, Hal dying at the end of the first episode. But this idea that the Guardians don't trust Hal because Sinestro was his mentor and Sinestro betrayed the Guardians. But this just leads into the whole idea that I sent you today, the screenshot of the panels from Green Lantern Rebirth, where it explains that Parallax kind of reached out through the battery, through the rings to find Hal and focused on him and started putting doubt and fear into his mind. And like, then I start going on crazy, like gym level conspiracy theories and stuff like that about what could come. I'm only being halfway facetious there because I think that was so long ago. I don't think anybody knows what I'm talking about, except you. But of the idea that what if this is – because the way the title cards of Lanterns opens, there's that flash of yellow, and then it zooms out, and that yellow flash is coming from inside the ring, and then it goes to the Lanterns title card. Well, what if that is symbolizing the fact that fear is starting to seep through and infect everybody? It's not just affecting Hal, because obviously he doesn't want to be replaced. It's affecting John in very obvious ways, because he's afraid if this doesn't happen, he's wasted his life and everything that he's been fighting for this entire time is for nothing. Macon is feeling fear because of all he's talk about, you know, the people who walked his land, and I'm not going to make the mistake of losing it to invaders and the Guardians. What I just said, they're worried about what's happening with Hal because of Sinestro. Antan, worried about this manhunter that got away from him, that did all this stuff to his people. There's all the sheriff talking about how she's worked her ass off to get respect, and I can't have you undermining that. And she says something about everything feels like it's on a knife's edge or something like that, like everything's about to explode. Like, so this whole "Are you afraid?" tagline. Everybody's afraid right now, and seeing that yellow flash inside the ring, I don't know, I'm just going wild with conspiracy theories, but that's what a good show does, I think. And I think, you know, in terms of how they're telling the story, obviously we're about to touch on specifics and how they break from continuity and all that other stuff, but like the way they're trying to spin this particular story with the world they're building and the rules they're building up around it in its own contained section, aside from everything else that you and I both know as Lantern fans, I find the TV show and the narrative and the way it's shot and so on and so forth, it's being done very cleverly. Also, time-wise, we talk about like the 10-year jumps back and forth. I like how we started this episode with John falling, but we looped back around to how he started to fall. Yeah, and I thought that was done in such a clever way. So there's lots of stuff to be really impressed by, and just like, this is an HBO show and so on and so forth. But I don't. Is it time to jump into the negative? I think
one thing which I guess is still borderline positive is, which you and I talked about a little bit earlier today, and we actually talked about it in this episode, alluded to it a little bit, just because we talked about Sinestro. The fact that everybody seems to know what happened, and we assume it's because of Hal's version of it, that everybody kind of repeats verbatim about Sinestro staged a coup, and in the attempted coup, a Guardian died, and Hal basically put Sinestro down. Now, we don't really know how that Guardian died. It's implied that's because we, again, not saying it, it's implied because we can naturally connect dots that Sinestro killed that Guardian during the attempted coup. But we don't necessarily know that's how the Guardian died. So it opens the door for potential other reasons why. And even, and like you pointed out, even if it was Sinestro, directly or indirectly responsible for killing a Guardian. Well, if Hal was able to take down Sinestro, then yes, Hal would be perceived as just as much of a threat because he beat the man to beat the man to beat the man, so to speak. Carrying that, you know, that old boxing term, you beat the man to beat the man, dot, 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 to beat John L. Sullivan, you know, the heavyweight champion, going tracing your lineage all the way back to the beginning. But it's interesting, again, about that. And I'm curious to see how that's going to play out when we're going to get more information about what actually happened, you know, regarding that coup. But getting to the negatives, and boy, there are a lot of negatives on this one. Let's start with the very beginning. Let's start with the beginning of the episode. Because, again, once Laura Linney's character shows up, oh, speaking of which, why are the Guardians tall?
I'm only playing devil's advocate for the sake of playing devil's advocate. We don't know that they are. She could have been short and floating. That's a ridiculous argument. I'm just saying, but it's still a potentially valid one.
it's asking a lot, but okay. But still, it was odd. All they had to do was they could have made her just short.
Liana was tall.
Yeah, but I think she's also was built like a brick shithouse too, if I'm thinking of the right one. when she aged up quick, she was like China. She was like, you know, China or
Big Barda.
Yeah.
To bring it back to DC.
Or Jade Cargill in wrestling now. Or Rhea Ripley before she lost all her weight. But yeah, the episode begins with, and I got to be honest with you, considering what we got in this episode, I think what I was afraid of happening last week is I would have preferred that happening. I would have preferred Jon Stewart himself being the one who almost got the ring as opposed to what they did. So depending on one's interpretation, either the ring came to Jon Stewart's father first and he choked under pressure, which is understandable that he choked under pressure, but he did. That's what it was. The ring asked the green bubble asked him whether he was afraid and he said yes. And then that was it for him. But Liana's character indicates that there were other candidates because she seemingly is going around doing damage control to the people who didn't get the ring and are all effed up because of it.
We have reports that many of the candidates considered for the role of Green Lantern have been experiencing emotional turmoil.
Yep. So there's one or two things here. Because of that statement, I'm going to, again, this is asking a lot at this point to give me, because the first few weeks I was giving cutting the creative team a lot of credit, cutting them a lot of slack for things that some people were picking up on and saying, oh, this is what they mean by this, or this could be race related. It's like, well, it could be interpreted that way, but it didn't have to be. But then you get this episode and you realize pretty much all those things absolutely were race related and there were no subtleties there. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt that because they introduced the concept that there were more candidates besides John's father and Hal, that I'm going to work under the base assumption that the way the ring selection process works is that the ring basically sends out these bubbles, the energy to find all the worthy candidate, period. And then this, essentially the selection process is made simultaneously with all the candidates. That one's going to be selected, but they're all essentially the selection process occurring at the same time with everybody who's up for the job and Hal got the job. Because if not, then that really alters Hal Jordan's origin ridiculously. So especially now that you know it wasn't just one person who could have gotten the ring, quote unquote, before him. But arguably there were multiple people. Actually, not arguably. There were multiple people based on what the Liana character says. If it's going in succession, not all simultaneous, then obviously Hal Jordan wasn't, forget about being sloppy seconds, he could have been sloppy fifths or sixths or worse. So that would be a massive change to Hal's origin. So I'm not a fan of that, but because of what she said, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. That is not what they want you to think.
Yeah, they are definitely interviewing. They're keeping an eye on absolutely everybody, and I have no doubt that Laura Linney's character approached nearly everybody who was potentially selected that night, because why else would she said, so we have reports. So it's one thing to have knowledge. She then says, I've found my natural form to be upsetting to humans. Meaning she has shown her natural form to humans before.
Yep.
So she has that experience. She's talking to other people. Add that to the fact, because some people have been like, well, it's a bit of a stretch. When John shows up for the interview, somebody else leaves the room before him.
Yep.
They've been keeping an eye on everybody, which I think lends to the idea that the Guardians have been keeping tabs on all the potential other options on Earth to find something that better aligns with their expectations of what a Lantern should be, because as we learned, the Guardians didn't want anybody from Earth. They intentionally avoided the planet. So now the fact that their first candidate from Earth, who, depending on what happened with Abin, maybe Abin was going against them and he intentionally came down to Earth and said, no, to hell with what the Guardians say. We need to select a human for it. Doesn't matter. We'll find out. But regardless of what happened, an Earthling was selected, and that particular Earthling happens to be one that doesn't listen to them. Again, whether they're benevolent or not, either way, a Lantern that under their care that doesn't listen to them is a bad thing for them. And that's their very first experience with humanity, and all of this mess is going on with Abin, and then Sinestro ends up almost wonder if they worry that if they potentially could possibly think that Hal was the one who infected Sinestro with his human ways, and that's why Sinestro went bad. That's a possible line of thought. I don't know if there's much merit to that, but they clearly don't trust Hal just for being a human. Add to that the fact that Sinestro ends up betraying them and Hal admires Sinestro. They are obviously clearly worried. So they're keeping tabs on absolutely everybody. So speaking to the John's father of it all, I had mentioned, and I've been saying online and so on and so forth, and I obviously mentioned to you, I have no problem with it just because they're historically, and the argument of, well, continuity says, guys, it's been 90 years of publication history. Crisis did this, but Zero Hour did this, but Final Crisis, it doesn't. There's been so many changes to so many things, and so many Elseworld stories, and so many Hypertime stories, and so many. You can point to anything and call it continuity at this point. Specifically when it comes to adapting material for media like TV or film, almost anything can be made. You can make an argument for the continuity of it. But in continuity, it was in Green Lantern 59. It was said that Guy and Hal were identically worthy. So Abin says, I'll just pick the one that's closest. Had Guy been closer, per that story, he would have been chosen over Hal. Then later comes Action Comics 642 at the end of the Action Comics Weekly series, where it's shown that when Abin crashes, the first person that's actually pulled to his ship is Clark Kent. But because Clark is able to, help alleviate some of Abin's pain and is clearly using X-ray vision and stuff that humans don't have, Abin says he's not qualified because he's not a native of the planet. So then he projects this image outside of the ship for Clark to look at of the other people that the ring had found, including which was Nightwing, which I guess at the time would be Dick Grayson. And then a couple of other random people. And then Hal is among them. And because Clark is Clark Kent, who interviews people and so on and so forth, he had interviewed Hal Jordan at some point because then NASA had passed him over for an astronaut program. And he goes, Abin, you really need to meet this guy, Hal. I think he's perfect. And then that ends up being why Abin chose Hal. Is that crazy? Sure. Is that in continuity anymore? It can't possibly be.
No,
but
it's not.
The idea that other people were chosen, it doesn't upset me because we've played with this 1,000 times already.
Yeah, but it's different because at the end of the day, even if you, when they added, we talked about this, when they added in the caveat to Guy being equally worthy, but Hal was closer, at the end of the day, you didn't change the result. And still Hal was the number one choice, even if it was because of distance. If you're implying that the ring went to John Stewart's father first, but because he fucked up and that he choked under pressure, then it went to Hal, even though besides, like we already said, we know that there's other candidates. So if you have, that's why I don't think that's what they're implying, but who knows? It would mean that Hal Jordan, it went was way the hell down the line for it to get to Hal, or else there would have only been one candidate. If they were not being interviewed simultaneously or considered simultaneously, that means you would have went from John to the next one, to the next one, or even somebody before John's father, and then to John, and then Hal eventually got it. That completely changes the origin and the worthiness of Hal Jordan. It's a big problem. Because it meant if John's father had said the right thing, he would have gotten the ring, if you believe the ring came to him first, as opposed to
it being simultaneous.
Yeah, and basically that was the opening question of the interview, and everybody who failed it got eliminated immediately, and then you got, you know, and maybe Hal Jordan was literally the only one who said the right answer, and it was either true or mostly true, and that's why he got it.
By default means he's the most worthy, because if the only requirement is the one question being answered right and everybody else answered wrong, then regardless of the circumstances under which they answered wrongly, they still answered incorrectly, so which means they're less worthy.
Yeah, but it still means the ring. But it means that the ring, if it's not simultaneous, it means the ring fought that person because they didn't give us anything about distance. And because we know there's more than one candidate other than Hal, it would seem to imply that Hal was not on the hierarchy of who they thought would be a good Green Lantern. He was not at the top of the list. And that's still a problem because Hal was supposed to be chosen because he was at the top of the list. Hmm. So I think, and it also changes things but they're playing so fast and loose. They completely butchered John's parents. Hmm. And we know in the comics, John's father is an asshole. Certainly, yep. That's the way he's been portrayed in modern times, because we literally just saw it in War Journal. We got a crash course on Jon Stewart's parents and their family dynamic just by War Journal. But it was Henry, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. So they changed the names of both parents.
I know for sure, Shirley.
Yeah, we know it's Shirley. That one, Shirley, you can't be serious. Now, we know why they probably changed Jon's father's name, just so that Hal could call him Junior, and it'd be like a divisive term, but also not really 100% B, because he actually would be a junior. But that makes no sense why, probably just because the writer didn't know much about it, John Stewart's actual comic book background, naming Shirley Bernadette. But so John Stewart's father is not really nuts, which I guess on one level is a plus, but his mother kind of is. That his mother is the driving force behind everything in this, that she's the one who's obsessed with, basically we got screwed over, and somehow this becomes like a privilege thing, like a race thing too, that they got screwed over, even though the ring, it sees no race, and the ring, obviously, if it was racist, would never have come to John Stewart's father anyway. And John Stewart's father, whether he was first selected or was going to go to the second round of the process, he's the one who gave the wrong answer. Nobody, it wasn't Whitey that made him give the wrong answer. He just choked under pressure. That had nothing to do with any. But I guess she would say, it's because society makes what was that stupid line she said, that how can you ask a black man in America whether they're afraid? That's what this episode had a lot of. And the fact that supposedly Hal was privileged, not necessarily just because he was white, but he was privileged essentially because he's white. Because you don't have to live in our shoes, so you don't have to experience fear the way we do. So you have this wonderful life that means you never have to grow up, that you're privileged to grow up without fear, which is a really narrow-minded, ridiculously egotistical, arrogant way of viewing things. That, the other side has everything. I mean, everybody always thinks the other side, the grass is always greener. But the idea that, nobody could possibly have a tough upbringing or know what fear is like on the other side. Of course, knowing nothing about Hal Jordan's background either. But that's kind of what this episode's sort of drifting into. But Bernadette Stewart is the one who they changed the whole family dynamic. I don't know. Does John actually have – John didn't have a brother, did he, in the comics?
Yes.
We just never see him.
I think so. I need to pull out Power of Ion again, but I'm pretty sure that when he wrecked the car with Ellie, his brother was also there, but –
oh, yeah, you might be right.
But I'm pretty sure I remember three kids in the car.
All right, so then you might be – you might be right. But either way, so now instead of having a brother and a sister, he's got two brothers. So John's being raised to basically make up for the father's sins in a way, and to raise this – put him through every ridiculously unfair, mean, traumatic situation possible known to man to try to make sure this kid grows up not just fearless. He grows up pretty much emotionless once he gets to a certain point. And this is, and his mother is the whole driving force behind all of this, only because Laura Linney said, you know, genetically speaking, he's got the same template as his father. So the same characteristics or the same abilities that were kind of innate to him should be innate in your son. So if you raise him the right way, and that became the catalyst. I like to see that we find out that all the other candidates that failed, that Laura Linney basically said the same thing to them. That's what I would like to find out. So John realizes that he kind of did. He might be special, but not as special as he thinks. And he kind of was. They kind of were hoodwinked because it's what the Guardians do.
I want to talk a bit about what she says about privilege. Speaking to the idea of the privilege, the specific quote is, and she was when she says they, she's referring to the Guardians. They know you better than they knew Hal Jordan, and they know you're better. And the only reason why he has that ring is because he's been privileged enough in this life that he didn't have to know fear. Some people are online talking about it, and I'm just going to quote somebody, but I'm not going to give their username or whatever. I'm just seeing things talking about how, you know, people who are like upset about the idea that she says Hal Jordan has been privileged. They obviously post the idea, the screenshots of panels where his dad's plane is crashing and he's getting kicked out of the Air Force, and his parents or his brother is like saying you killed his mother when his mother died of a heart attack and like all that stuff. And so people are arguing, saying like Hal didn't come out to the public for another 10 years. So she actually has no idea that he was a man without a father growing up in the situation he did, and that she's projecting her fears and assumptions onto the situation, that the whole episode is about perspective. Yes, the whole episode is about perspective, but she actually did know, because when the Guardian shows up, she never says Hal. She never says Hal Jordan. She never says that name. And according to the story we're told here, she never interacts with the Guardian again. So the only way, when she tells the quote I just said to John, that she would know the name Hal Jordan, is because of the TV interview. And in the TV interview, he says his father died in front of him, basically. And any parent should understand that their children watching them die in front of them is definitely not something to be privileged. So I think it's just knowing that context, and knowing that if she knows the name Hal Jordan, she also has to know what else he said in that interview about his father dying. And for her to still say that, despite being a parent, I think says a lot about herself and where she's at and her obsession and the delusion that she's spinning for herself and her family and John. I have no doubt that there are glimpses, just like there are, I'm assuming, with lots of people who actually have bad parents in real life. There are glimpses of positive interactions and so on and so forth that are, you fondly look back on, but they're also still a lot of crazy shit. And some of the shit that's happening that she's done, the fact that she's the one, like, John's the one that mentions the words William Tell, but his mother's the one that's like, yeah, do it. So, like, very clearly, they're setting up the idea that she's a little unstable.
She's obsessive.
Yes.
She's obsessive, and because, again, she feels, again, it's this is not realistic, that she feels that basically Hal Jordan got something that they should have gotten, number one. That should have been theirs. And then because it should have been theirs, but it wasn't theirs, that means they're entitled to it down the road. So anything, John has to carry the flag uphill. John's the one who's basically all the hopes and dreams of the whole family is being thrown on John, even though, of course, by doing what she's doing, she's kind of destroying the family, because they're clearly putting child A instead of the other two. That this is the child that really matters. In fact, it's even that comment, like one of his brothers says, we just thought that you liked him better, or whatever it was, about why he's... Yeah, and she's the one that, yeah, let's go take him outside and go shoot apples off his head. And then eventually do the opposite, have John start shooting the apples off, which is one of the funniest parts of them, and probably the only good part of the episode when it came to that. One of the few good parts, I'll be fair, is when John was basically in the mood to go shoot again. And she said, I'll go get your father. It's like, no, I want you.
Who's scared now, bitch?
That's right.
I just think it's because I get your point about like the wokeness and the referring to racial disparity in America and so on and so forth. But I also think that they are in some ways countering their own point intentionally by setting her up to say things that are just not true about Hal.
You would like to think that's true, but looking at the way people are reacting to it, everybody who's pro, it is somewhat amusing and disturbing at the same time that so many people are, even if you believe even half the POV that Bernadette Stewart has, you still should be able to realize that she's fucking up. She really fucked up her kid. And it was, and she kind of, it was really unfair how she raised him. But just the idea that some of the stuff, like you're saying, that it's like, okay, that she, you can understand why she may want to believe that, but there's no evidence of that. But if you listen to the people defending the Bernadette Stewart's POV, most of them kind of agree with that. It's like, oh, what she's talking about is, like I said earlier, like, oh, it's like, a, how dare you ask a black man in America if you're afraid? Which is such, again, it's such an ass. I mean, the biggest part of the problem with this stuff is that the people who write this crap, I think legitimately this is part of the issue, is that they really believe that growing up in middle America in 1986 through 2016 was like growing up in that deep South during the 40s and the 50s and the 60s before the civil rights movement changed stuff. That they literally believe that there's no difference in growing up in America now and the way people are treated now than they were treated then. I think I don't even think so. That's so, and that they don't believe it. That they almost have to believe it because that's the way they frame it. I mean, you can, yeah, you could frame it and not really believe it, but I tend to think that they actually believe that. It's like this is what they think, that it's. Let's use another a line from the first episode. A lot of people zeroed in on the first line. Actually, there's two lines. You got Hal. John talking to his father saying, and John's father saying to him, paraphrasing, you know, they can act like this, son, or they can do this, but we can't. Now, almost so many people assigned race to that immediately. I could see where it could be race-related. I was giving them the benefit of the doubt. That could also mean something else. Now we look at it, clearly they were talking about race. But when Hal was talking and doing the interrogation scene with the alien mentioning Barack Obama, there were so many people online going, oh, it's kind of funny that though Hal was able to figure out that they were an alien, it's because they weren't racist. And it's like, well, that's not the only interpretation of why – he was doing that, because you're literally living in the middle of the country that is not going to be pro-Obama. And the reality is you would have more feelings, exactly what he said. You would have more feelings about Barack Obama than just always the 44th president or whatever he was. Yeah, 44. But clearly, if now we connect all the dots, that's where they were going with that. So, again, they think that they're living in the middle of America, they're all like racist hicks or something. So I know what I'd like to think you're right, but I don't really think that's the case. I think the evidence has been building. If you connect all the dots between the episodes, that's kind of, you know what this reminds, this is like if the Alan Scott miniseries, which we both love so much, was a TV show, this third episode would be like how the first issue of that series was, where they beat you over the head, beat you over the head, beat you over the head, beat you over the head. They just wouldn't do that in this series because they know in this series has to try to appeal to a bigger audience. So if they did this in episode one, with so many people already being like Lantern fans, especially being so much on the fence about this, and you're trying to reel in as big an audience as possible, you would have lost a lot of people right away. So yeah. I think this is how, you know, the creative team feels about this. I do. There's some nuance to it. Like I said, the fact that there's some exploration of stuff. All I know is for me, I looked the other way, even the stuff between with Zoe and John in the last episode, where's your white man or whatever the hell she said. It's such a small part of both the first two episodes that I was willing to just, okay, you know, the Tony Stark line, I'm going to allow that. And you just move beyond it. But it was all building towards this. I kind of think we kind of knew a lot of it was building towards something like this. And this episode hasn't lost me for the show. Mm-hmm. But I would say this is like a crossing the Rubicon kind of moment, because now I can't really see the show the same way, because if something, when the next time something like this gets dropped in, which you know it's going to be at some point, mm-hmm. that it's like, oh, there they go again. So now you're at the point where you can't overlook it. It's like, and I mentioned this, I think, a long time ago, one of my favorite Stephen King books is Duma Key. Duma Key is also one of the books where he throws in the most ridiculous, nonsensical personal politics of his into the story. Well, I mean, I forget how many times he does it, but he does it multiple times. So you become consciously aware of it, which basically is the cardinal sin, but he's Stephen King, so we can do it, of writing, which is you don't want to break the immersive world you're creating. It becomes crystal clear that he's bringing, because the book isn't even about politics. So he brings in his personal politics, and it takes you out of the story, and culminating in what I think it's about his father, the character's father-in-law, who dies of rectal cancer, and basically it's supposed to be justified that he died of rectal cancer because he's like this redneck Republican. It's like, this doesn't belong in a story, but once you see it, you can't unsee it going forward. And so it's like kind of like that. So I'm so invested in the story because I want to see how this mystery plays out. I want to see what happens with Hal and John. But now every time they throw something like this in, it's going to be, okay, there they go. There they go. And you just, I'm probably just going to roll my eyes now because they beat you so heavily with it in this episode. Plus, let's be honest, the episode was pretty boring, at least the first 30 minutes of it. It picked up a little towards the end, but it was...
Yeah,
it was kind of boring.
I see where you're coming from with a lot of that stuff. I'm not keen on weighing in on it myself. And this is not for the listeners, and I guess for you as well. This is not me like separating myself from Mark or saying that he's wrong. And, you know, the opinions held by Mark Marble are not necessarily the opinion, you know, like none of that stuff. It's just when it comes to the argument of whether it's too heavy handed to bring up and talk about topics like racism or sexism or homophobia or those sorts of things, my personal thing is that I don't know whereof I speak there because I've never been involved in those things. Because like when we're talking about what is it like to be a black man in America and be afraid, and so like I understand your analogy about like the difference in treatment of race between pre-civil rights, post-civil rights, so on and so forth, I fully understand and agree with that. But what I'm saying is, like, if I, as a white man born in Texas, start speaking on it, like, I know what whereof I speak. I just feel like I don't have a voice there. I think a lot of, just to give a kind of analogy, if anybody has ever seen the TV show Parenthood, there's one of the characters who's played by Dax Shepard. You know, there's spoilers if anybody cares. It's been years. But a woman comes back into town with whom he had a relationship with, and it turns out he has a son, and it's a black woman, and they have obviously an interracial son. And through a bunch of hijinks throughout various seasons, those two end up actually getting together and raising their son together. And at one point, their little boy comes home and starts talking about the N-word and like, why can he say it? Can I say it? Can so-and-so say it? They talk about rap songs and so on and so forth. And Dax Shepard's character as the dad just like is watching his son struggle with this and just goes, I don't know how to help. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. And just sort of has to defer to his mom because then he starts talking a bit about like, you know, seeing my son go through this. I can't imagine what it would have been like for you as, you know, you as my wife when I don't want anybody to talk to you like that, you know, and so on and so forth. And like he very clearly has empathy for the situation and so on and so forth. But he finds himself in a situation where he doesn't feel like he has the ability to speak definitively and answer a question his son is asking him. So I think about that and go, if I found myself in a similar situation, I'm pretty sure I'd feel equally lost. And I think that's obviously a very emotional and very personal specific situation that somebody could find themselves in. And this is not that. But when it comes to reacting to this stuff, for me personally, I feel like I'm a bit at a loss. And because I'm at a loss, I feel like I can't really say anything.
No, I get it. When I mentioned to you when I was looking at some of the reviews for this last night, that I did find it refreshing again because and this is ultimately the point. Making blanket statements is dangerous because everybody does not have the same experience. People right. are not monolithic, and just because you happen to be a white person in America and you can be poor, live in a horrible neighborhood, and go through a lot of the same crap. Similar crap, and you could be somebody who could be black and you could grow up in an affluent, and you could not, and this is where I'm going with this, that there was a commenter who made it clear that they were a black male, and they just said they were kind of frustrated or exhausted by the fact that every time you see a black character portrayed, that they always have to have either been victimized or been traumatized, you know, somehow growing up or by society, and it just gets exhausting because that's just not the way it always is.
Yeah.
And that he's the one, I think, used the term ham-fisted, the way that the things were portrayed in that episode. And so it doesn't have to be, not everybody's going to view this the same way regardless. And it's not like you can't talk. I mean, talking about these things is fine. It's just that when you just beat it over the head over and over again, and when you seem pretty narrow. I mean, let's be honest. It's kind of hard not to view Bernadette Stewart kind of as a racist, the way she comes across, the way she talks, she frames much more than the husband. I mean, he's just got PTSD because he's every time he sees Hal Jordan, which at least explains in the first episode why they had to keep watch to let John know when the father pulled in the driveway so we could stop watching Hal Jordan on TV. Mm-hmm. But the idea that everything is just like when she's made that stupid comment to the Guardians, like, oh my God, like even you don't notice us. It's like, oh my God. It's like, really? The reason they don't notice you is because they view human beings all as one collective species. That's the which is kind of an oddity on one level. I think it fits, but we know in the comic books, the Guardians are supposed to be smart. Supposed to be. This is why it's hard not to read into this too. That the Guardians, when John Stewart was introduced, know all about racial prejudice and everything else, because they pretty much accuse Hal of being prejudiced when he's voicing his concerns or his disapproval of John being selected. So they
and I think the quote from, what was it, is 89, 87? I forget the issue number.
Not your petty prejudices.
Yeah, we're not interested in your petty prejudices or bigotries. I forget which one they said.
Yeah. Or maybe it was both. But I'm pretty sure they said prejudices at least. But either way. So they know that, and they probably know it not just because of, wow, Earth sucks, but because they've been dealing with like hundreds of thousands of sentient beings, so this is probably not an uncommon occurrence. So because of the way it's framed in this, on one level it seems the Guardians are kind of they're not viewing people as different because they're seeing everybody as a collective species. But at the same time, if that's the case, you could also read into it. You could read into it that somehow that's implying that somehow this racism is inherent to either Earth or specifically to America. No, so because you can take that one way. I mean, from the Guardians' perspective, the Guardians, it makes sense they would view everybody collectively as one species. Mm-hmm. They should be aware because common sense dictates that other worlds have the same issues. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they make it sound like, oh, this is, or maybe there's in their minds and their experiences, the differences between different aspects or different similar species on the same planet are much more physically diverse, causing these. But either way, the fact that they seemingly are unaware of this stuff, that opens the door to interpretation that, this is a uniquely Earth or uniquely American problem, and that either one is kind of troubling. But I still appreciate the fact that no matter what she's trying to imply about the Guardians being, oh, they're ignoring us too, they don't see us, that's just such a bullshit. That's a heavy-handed statement that's obviously coming from a writer who's trying to drive a point home about our society and putting it in, tying it into the Guardians of the universe, which it really makes no sense with.
Yeah, the racist stuff, I think, it exists on other worlds. I think a good example would probably be Thanagar, because you have the humanoid flying individuals, but you also have like Izamot, which is like a lizard person.
Yeah.
You know, so two different things. Maybe play devil's advocate a little bit. Corwin had wrote over on the Discord. He said they wrote a lot of the black experience perfectly with John's mom and the Guardian. Do you think because of John Sr., the Guardians are going about recruiting Earthlings differently? I said a few things, which I've already said in this episode, but I ended with, I think the Guardians could give two shits about the racial dynamics at play on Earth. They purposely didn't want recruits from our planet for a reason, right? So why would someone being chosen from here suddenly make them invested? In addition to that, I think I'll say organically that I think Laura Linney's character showed that she finds this all silly and petty, because when she says she's like a black man or a black person, she goes, by black, do you mean brown? Like, she said it in a very like non-serious sort of way. I don't know the right word to say, facetiously, or she just said it almost like with a lilt in her voice a little bit, like as just like that this is just all beneath her and silly.
Well, I think she's trying to understand. I think she was trying. She was trying to understand. But what the point of what she was saying was, because
they've damaged my perception of the Guardians so much by making them outright villains that I have such a hard time reading sincerity into what she's doing.
I mean, there could have been baggage there too. But I'm saying the reason why she asked that is because she's legitimate. I think she was legitimately confused, because that's why it's like, do you mean brown? Because mm-hmm. of the fact that you're not black, because they're not black, just like we're not white. We're more like pink or whatever or something. Whatever we are, we're not really white because we're not opaque or anything. So I think the other thing that maybe builds into the whole mystery of what's going on here is, yes, We were not supposed to have Green Lanterns from Earth. So why would it be such high priority for them to be? That's why I think it would be cool if you see that they are. They gave the same marching orders to all the other candidates who had kids, or maybe even after not even if they didn't have kids yet, when they did, do the same thing that they kind of did with Bernadette Stewart.
I'm nearly convinced they did.
I think so too. Who knows? That whole interview process could have all been those kids.
Yes.
But the point is, Sector 2814 is a hell of a lot bigger than Earth. So why are they doubling down so much on seemingly, not that they're guaranteeing anything. But remember, she never guaranteed John would be a Green Lantern. She guaranteed John would basically have a fair shot at being a Green Lantern. Why are they making such a concerted effort to have potential recruits on Earth now when Earth was never supposed to have any, and Sector 2814 is much bigger than Earth? So, and again, why would you be so that's other piece of the puzzle here, which who knows if we're going to get an answer to yet, because we're going from you're not supposed to have any Green Lanterns of Earth till you had Hal, you have Guy, you seemingly in some way, shape, or form at some point we're going to have John. So the reality is okay. And
maybe they don't trust Hal, but they see the potential he has because he was able to take down Sinestro.
Well, I also think.
So what if we could get one of those, but on our side this time?
Well, that's, again, working under the base assumption that Hal Jordan was a problem from the beginning, and I don't necessarily think that's supposed the case.
Yeah.
I think Hal's always going to be going to march of a different drummer to a certain extent, but I'm sure they were. This which raises another question too. If they're so unhappy with Hal Jordan, why don't they just strip him of the ring?
Yeah, Corin brings that up in the Discord. I didn't read that part. But
yeah, there's got to, because again, this makes you wonder if there's certain dynamics that the Guardians, as powerful as they're supposed to be, are not as powerful as they want you to think they are. Because obviously, the ring selection process is the ring selection process. But if they were really that unhappy with Hal Jordan, then why wouldn't they strip him of the ring? I mean, so that's the thing. I mean, that's why there's a missing component of this too, and that could tie into why they're looking for other. But I think we're gonna find. I mean, I think we would find out that Hal in the beginning was mostly obedient to the Guardians, which also probably meant when he was doing hero stuff on Earth that they would prefer him not to do. If he was just hanging around, not on assignment, and he was doing Earthbound things because he thought it was right, they preferred him not to do it. But they just look the other way because at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. And whenever we need him, he does what we want him to do. And it's okay that there was a line of demarcation, which, again, might be that 2000, probably is going to be the 2006 to 2016 period where Hal became disgruntled. The Guardians became disgruntled, like ties back into the backup. Is Hal not backing himself up by choice? Is Hal not allowed to back himself up anymore because the Guardians won't let him? Something about that doesn't make any sense. He's supposed to back up every month. He hasn't backed up in 10 years. Mm. So is it by his choice because he doesn't trust the Guardians? Because the Guardians would have access to everything that he knows? They may think they know what he knows, but if they have his backup and his brain imprints and his patterns, they're going to know everything that he knows. So maybe he's choosing not to do that, but then why would they allow him not to do that? Or is he being banned from upgrade because they think he's corrupted in some way, shape, or form? So they don't want – there's so many things here, which makes you wonder how many answers we're going to get in this, which starts concerning me as we roll on to the halfway point of this series, if we're going to get enough answers that are going to make us happy.
Yeah. To answer why they don't take the ring, possible reason, again, potentially ridiculous, but possible reason, ego. If they were the ones responsible for the selection process and how they chose the ring, they can't possibly have made a mistake.
True. I was also thinking the core itself, that it could have ramifications in the core itself, depending on how standing in the core. That if Hal Jordan is well regarded in the core itself,
yeah,
especially
post. Or if everybody worships the way the ring selection process works and idolizes it and like it's never wrong and look at all the heroes it's led, for them to suddenly step in and make an exception and say no, we don't agree, then they are kind of shunning their own thing that they've sort of mythologized at this point.
Yes, but also. If Hal Jordan is thought in ridiculously high regard by the Corps because he's the one that stopped Sinestro.
Oh, that's true.
That it would be borderline dangerous for them to take, you know, the hero of the Corps and strip him of the ring and then try to justify it I mean, I'm sure they would try to come up with, because they're Guardians, they would try to spin it somehow. But
I find it interesting, the dichotomy, the difference, that we're supposed to have a Hal Jordan who doesn't back up, who's changed severely, who the Guardians don't trust, who he's not. Every time John's like, "Did you speak with the Guardians?" Like, "I didn't check in with the Guardians." But also a Hal Jordan who's enough communication with the Guardians that the minute the interview is over, they have given their instructions to Hal and said, "You're going to train this guy." And Hal's clearly against it, but he's doing it anyway. So is he or is he not in communication with him? Why didn't they, when they reached out to him to say, "Hey, train this guy," and I assume he argued with him about it in some way, shape, or form, why didn't they throw in some of that? How come you haven't been backing yourself up? And what, like, why haven't you been checking in? You know, and or actually, I'm sorry, I'm getting timelines messed up on the check-in, because obviously their adventures happen after that. But you get the idea. I assume he's probably not checking in before they go on their adventure and he has to train him. He's probably still not checking in before the 2016 events.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's safe to say the Guardians don't trust Hal. The question is, is it more than just, well, you know, Sinestro trained him, and so we have to watch this guy too, and he stops Sinestro. So is it just stemming from Sinestro or in that event, or are there other reasons which we have not been privy to yet, storytelling wise? And we also, and it's even more clear that Hal doesn't trust the Guardians, because of the fact that he's been keeping the Guardians in the dark about as much stuff as possible. He even when he should be reaching out to the Guardians, and you almost, based on the way the vibes are, you kind of think he would have reached out to them previously under different circumstances. That it's just, and like we know, we talked about last time, the fact that once he finds out about the Manhunters, what does he do first? Does he go to talk to the Guardians? No, he goes to talk to Sinestro.
Mm-hmm.
Which means there's something about the Guardians that he does not trust, including believing the idea that the Guardian, you know, even though both he and John seemingly were against the idea that maybe that the concept of the Guardians would have put the Manhunter on Earth on purpose, that obviously there's something about this dynamic that he still does not, something isn't sitting right with him about it enough to go talk to the Guardians themselves or to make them aware of the situation. So there's got to be some doubt in his mind. That at the very least, the Guardians probably already know more about this than they're letting on, and certainly more than he knows and more than John Stewart knows that have been put into this situation. Even though, to be fair, they didn't send them to Nebraska. That was Hal, but still, the point is.
In addition, one thing just because it didn't cleanly fit in anywhere, I wanted to mention this since we seem to be wrapping up the conversation a little bit. People upset about the idea that of John's father being chosen and everything. And I mentioned I wasn't too upset about it. There's also people being upset that the question is, are you afraid? And that it really should be the ring saying you're capable of overcoming great fear. Welcome to the Green Lantern Corps or whatever. It's like, look, they got it close enough. Like, and plus people are saying, like, what is that? Green Lanterns aren't supposed to be fearless. They're supposed to be able to overcome great fear and so on. So they're getting it wrong. And first of all, that's all stuff that happened in Geoff Johns era.
Yep.
And it's been constantly changing ever since. As a matter of fact, when Hal Jordan was first introduced, the ring never said shit to him. It was Abin telepathically as he was transporting him to his ship crash. But regardless, I think if you watch, like, because there are 1,000 interviews and you'll see them when scrolling social media on TikTok or Instagram, or they'll pop up all over the place, these little 5-second clips or whatever, these one question, one answer snippets of interviews. There are interviews where you'll see Kyle Chandler talking about the nature of fear and what it means to be capable of overcoming fear. He says those words. Kyle Chandler's not a Green Lantern fan reading the comics. The only way he knows that is because it's in the source material. Now, the argument could be made it's in the packets of Green Lantern comics that he read, and he was able to glean that from the source material that he was given as opposed to the script, and it's not actually in the script. Okay, great. But I'm leaning with it's in the script somewhere that they're exploring what it means to be fearless versus being capable of overcoming fear. That is a point they are trying to make with this season. So people losing their minds over the fact that Green Lanterns aren't technically supposed to be fearless. They know. They're telling you a story about it.
Yeah. And besides, if you're going to go down the road of having a test, I mean, technically speaking, you have the ability to overcome great fear isn't a question. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's the second part of the process. If you say yes, maybe that's the thing that the thing that comes next is, oh, I don't know. I get it. It's just kind of wearing me down a little. I really hope the next episode will start giving us a little more answers about exactly what was some of this stuff.
Hey, it's more compelling than the comics we're getting, man.
Oh, there's no doubt about that.
It's spawning conversation. We're agreeing with each other in some spots, disagreeing with each other in others. We're looking forward to something Green Lantern, regardless of our problems with it. We're still looking forward to it. It hasn't lost us yet. So, bring it on.
That is true.
All right. Do we have anything else?
Yeah, I got a few things. Just talk about that horrible Kyle figure. Yeah.
All
the McFarlane figures that they dropped. They dropped three lanterns? Not counting Kyle?
Three? Metaphil, Not Kaloy, and Gehur.
Yeah, which all are cool. I didn't order any of them. And then there's Kyle. I guess this answers our question about whether Kyle's new costume was just horrible because the artist is pretty bad in the book right now drawing him. Or is the costume is inherently a dog? I think we can reach the conclusion the costume is just a dog. Because, oh my God, seeing that as an action figure, that is the ugliest effing thing I have ever seen on God's green earth. I don't care what kind of Kyle Rayner fan you are. You have to be pretty damn – you either have to be
– I'm not getting it, and he's one of my favorites.
I know. I got the vibe that you didn't get it, and that by itself, because if there's a completist out there, it would be you. But, yes, you would have to be the most gung-ho – I mean, the funniest thing is when I saw somebody post – I'm going to get it because we haven't had a Kyle Rayner figure in a while. It's like, where the hell have you been for the last 3 years? We've had Kyle Rayner figures up to friggin' wazoo. I mean, we had the crap.
I'm looking at two of them right now. Actually, three of them.
You know, yeah. We have the, and eventually you'll look at another one. We have the, you know, we had that crappy original, not the original costume that he had, but the first one they released, which was his worst costume before this one.
Lime green.
And then we had Blue Lantern Kyle. Mm-hmm. And then we had Classic Kyle. Kyle. Then we had Blue Lantern Kyle. And now we've had White Lantern Kyle. And then we got this abortion.
Yeah.
It's just, wow. Meanwhile, we're waiting for Sam Walker desperately and we get this crap. But not surprisingly, this figure's still available because you'd have to be blind to order it. No offense.
I'm looking forward to getting the other three Green Lanterns. I don't know that I will seek them out. I think it's going to be I'm going to stumble across them and be like, awesome, found it, got it.
Yeah, well, I do have to make a note of the day Sinestro goes on sale because I do want Sinestro. Sinestro actually looks cool. Plus, it looks like it's a different sculpt. So, briefly, Spider-Man Brand New Day. About to cross 900 million. By the time this comes out, it will already have done so. And it's creeping ever closer to The Force Awakens. Still think it's going to come up short, but it's doing well. Coyote versus Acme. I highly recommend going to see Coyote versus Acme. That's my what have I seen. Not just because it's an entertainment.
What? I knew it would be good.
Yes, go see it. Everybody should go see it for multiple reasons. Not just because if you have Looney Tune ties. But because of the story behind this movie, how we almost never got to see this movie because WB was just going to write it off as a friggin' tax, as a tax loss for no reason, despite the fact everybody who saw the movie liked the movie, but they just
they did. They're not going to. They did.
Well, yeah, they did. They wrote it off as a tax loss, but they were planning and shelving it and never showing it. It was never going to see the light of day. Mm-hmm. And then they got pressured into putting it up for distribution if somebody gave them the right amount of money, which I guess Ketchup Entertainment finally did. And that's why the movie got released. But the point is, if not for the pressure for fans and everybody else putting pressure on WB, they never would have made the movie available for distribution. Thus, it never be in the theaters. So this it's surprisingly emotional. There are parts in this movie that I tear. Not that it takes that much to make me tear up, but there are things when they deal with Wile E. Coyote and the way they frame his journey. It makes a lot of sense because of his work ethic, man. He gets up every single day, works hard, has hope every single day. Blue Lantern, Wile E. Coyote has hope regardless of how much he continues to fail.
I smell Mark's next Daryl Banks commissioner.
So he believes, man. He's a true believer. It's like the American dream. So I would recommend going to see it. I think it's fun. They do a really good job with the live action, the animation mixed in. I think it works really well. And Wile E. Coyote is the main character. I mean, as opposed to, you know, Roger Rabbit, but the Bob Hoskins, Eddie's character, was really the main character. Wile E. Coyote, I think, is really the main character in this movie. And it's funny. It's funny. You got a cameo from almost everybody. No Marvin, though, which still boggles my mind. They couldn't have figured out how to fit Marvin the Martian into this movie. But I think almost every other major and tons of minor Looney Tunes characters get cameos, or more than cameos in some instances. So I would highly recommend it. And that's all I got.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us and let us know what they're thinking about Lanterns, what do they do?
LanternCast.com. The website is LanternCast.com, like I just said. LanternCast.com, in case you didn't get that. did I mention LanternCast.com? LanternCast@gmail.com. That's your email. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, #GeoCast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
And don't forget, guys, we're also on YouTube. A lot of people have been asking for a long time for us, our shows to be available to listen to there. They're there now, too.
That is true.
So, all right. And we actually probably have a couple videos. I'm working on some for short form for social media and stuff. I know if they're short enough to be posted as YouTube shorts, I will. But I think they have a time limit over on YouTube. And you're working
on it too, right? I got to get that done this week, or else it's going to go by the wayside. Now, because of how we're recording this, the odds are I'll be able to do it, because I probably could release it at the end of this week, and then it won't get in the way of our previous episode, 661.
Yeah. So. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.